You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, you know, it seems that there is a great forgetting going on, to use the phrase that Daniel Quinn popularized in his Ishmael books. There is, like, this generation, and it's not, and I don't mean to, like, be picking on any one particular generation, but there are a lot of people who are young enough that they don't remember life before Ronald Reagan. And since our schools are now teaching to the test, No Child Left Behind, post Bill Bennett, ripping up the curriculum out of the education department, something like that, they don't know the history of many of today's programs. If you were to ask the average high school graduate today, you know, how did the 40-hour work week come about? How did unemployment insurance happen? They wouldn't be able to tell you. In what year did the federal government say that it was illegal for an employer to break strikes and hire goons to basically beat up strikers? The year, by the way, was 1935. It was the Wagner Act. They wouldn't be able to tell you. It's like history repeats itself in scary ways, to paraphrase George Santayana. Or maybe it was somebody else who said those who don't remember history are doomed. In fact, I think it was. But in any case, here, for example, is, well, actually, let me just pause for just a moment here. There's a bunch of news that I want to get out. First of all, Troy Davis lost his hearing yesterday. We've been talking so much about this is terrible. I don't know where they're going on this. We're trying to find out. It looks like there is no place else to go, unless perhaps the governor. I just don't know. But he's scheduled to be executed tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So it looks like our nation is going to put to death in the state of Georgia a man who almost certainly is innocent. Secondly, the post-Reagan generation, the group that I'm talking about here, people in their 20s and 30s, totally screwed. 37% of young families are now living under poverty. People, young families being couples that are and couples with children, with or without children, who are under 30 years old. 37% living in poverty. Elderly couples, 5.7% living in poverty. This is the first time we've seen this, an entire generation sliding backwards. So here's an example of why the politics of this. And then I want to share with you, as we go through this hour, Franklin Roosevelt addressing the early David and Charles Kochs of his time and the early conservatives of his time. But anyhow, the early David Lewis's of his time. Here's David Lewis telling Fox News' Neil Cavuto, this guy is going to try to primary John Boehner as a Republican in Ohio. Every member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years, including the Speaker of the House, John Boehner. He's up for re-election in 2012. This guy wants to take him on, Republican to Republican, in a primary. Here's what he had to say.
Well, John Boehner is a socialist. I'm not calling him names. What I'm doing
socialist.
Is
now, talking, Dave,
he's
Dave,
a socialist.
Dave. Now, come on. Now, that's a little extreme.
It's an economic policy. I'm not calling names, but here's somebody that refuses to phase out Social Security. What I would do as a U.S. House member is work to phase out Social Security totally, 100%. That includes Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps. These are socialist policies.
See, this guy wouldn't know a socialist if he bit him in the leg. So anyway, these socialist policies. So let's listen to the guy who put into place most of these socialist policies. That would be Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In 1940, he had a fireside chat with the American people. This was May of 1940. He's sitting down with the American people. War is raging in Europe, and we're on the verge of entering it, and in Asia. And the Great Depression, we're not out of the woods yet. So when he's referring to the present emergency, he's referring to, you know, worldwide war that in some ways we are starting to gear up for. And, well, actually, he's got to be talking about the war, because later on in this he says no war, millionaires. In fact, I might have misdated this. This may be a little later than 1940. But in any case, here, this first clip, basically he's saying we do not need to do away with Social Security to win the war, because the Republicans of his day were saying, oh, look at, you know, all these war expenses, we've got to do away with the social programs. Here's Franklin Roosevelt.
It is whispered by some that only by abandoning our freedom, our ideals, our way of life, can we build our defenses adequately, can we match the strength of the aggressors. I did not share those illusions. I do not share these fears. Today we are more realistic, but not let us not be calamity howlers and discount our strength. Let us have done with both fears and illusions.
Yes, okay, let's do away with both the fears and the illusions. The fearmongers, though, are out there, and he's pushing against the Paul Ryans of his day here in clip number two. Basically, this is absolutely history repeats itself, except this is a president who, well, now, yesterday, President Obama calling them out. Here's Franklin Roosevelt calling out the Paul Ryans and the John Boehners of his day.
While our Navy and our airplanes and our guns and our ships may be our first lines of defense, it is still clear that way down at the bottom, underlying them all, giving them their strength, sustenance, and power, are the spirit and the morale of a free people. For that reason, we must make sure in all that we do that there be no breakdown or cancellation of any of the great social gains
we
have made in these past years. We have carried on an offensive on a broad front against social and economic inequalities, against abuses which had made our society weak. That offensive should not now be broken down by the pincers movement of those who would use the present needs of physical military defense to destroy it.
So here we are in World War II, or on the edge of World War II, and these guys are saying, oh, you've got to do away with the Social Security. You've got to do away with the social programs. You've got to do away with the minimum wage. In fact, you've got to do it. You've got to stop hiring people. The government can't have the Civilian Conservation Corps. The government can't have the World Works Progress Administration. The government can't hire people. Do we have a minute for clip three here, Jacob? Do we have time for it? Yep, here we go.
There is nothing in our present emergency to justify a lowering of the standards of employment. Minimum wages should not be reduced.
Yeah, there you go. There's nothing to, you know, the standards of employment. Minimum wages should not be reduced. This is not what we should be doing. Now, this is a guy who's fighting a war. Now we have a president who's fighting a couple of wars. And frankly, you know, tax the rich should just be the start of it. This young man from Ohio, David Lewis, who is calling John Boehner a socialist, because John Boehner has voted for food stamps, for Social Security. He says, I would undo all of the social program. Well, he didn't realize that all these things weren't all Social Security to begin with. But that's the thing. I mean, there's this great forgetting. People don't understand that history cycles through over and over and over again, and we keep repeating these things. In fact, I want to share, this is my Franklin Roosevelt hour. I want to share a little more of this with you, because this is so important to understand today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Roosevelt talks about the war millionaires.
They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Yeah, Unless it's history repeating itself, what we are seeing right now is the same thing that we saw in 1920, 30, 31, 32, 33, an entire generation of young people coming of age during that period of time being impoverished compared to their parents and grandparents. Post-Reagan generation is screwed. According to the latest census data, 37%, more than a third of all young families being defined as families where typically husband and wife are under 30 years old or under, now live in poverty. Why? Because we haven't understood the lessons of history, the cycles of history. Here's it, because these guys there, they created an artificial crisis by the Republicans, Reagan, Bush, and Bush. They created an artificial crisis by running up about a $10 trillion debt. About $10 trillion of it is attributable to Republicans. And then they're screaming about the debt. Okay, so we got this crisis. Well, Franklin Roosevelt had a crisis, too. He had a war on his hands, and he was at the tail end of the Great Depression. And here's what he had to say about, the people who were saying, we can't afford Social Security, we can't afford the WPA, we can't afford the CCC, we can't afford to be hiring people, we can't afford these things and fight a war at the same time. We've got to do away with these social programs. Here's Franklin Roosevelt in a fireside chat.
There is nothing in our present emergency to justify a breaking down of old age pensions or of unemployment insurance. I would rather see the systems extended to other groups who do not now enjoy them. There is nothing in our present emergency to justify a retreat, any retreat from any of our social objectives, from conservation of natural resources, assistance to agriculture, housing, and help to the underprivileged.
You get that? In other words, not only do those things stimulate the economy, but they build a strong nation. They built the wealthiest middle class this country had ever seen in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s, until Ronald Reagan began systematically dismantling it and handing all that money off to the billionaires and turning the working class into the working poor, so that now that we see the people who are coming into the workplace, people in their 30s, 37% of them living in poverty. Why? Because the attempt that was made in the 40s against Roosevelt by these Republicans to say, "Oh, we got to do away with these social programs," like this kid now who says he's going to primary John Boehner because the guy's a socialist. Because Franklin Roosevelt pushed back. Here's clip number five. He says, we're not even going to let there be any war millionaires out of this thing.
Our present emergency and
That's
a common
war.
Sense of decency make it imperative that no new group of war millionaires shall come into being in this nation as a result of the struggles abroad. The American people will not relish the idea of any American citizen growing rich and fat in an emergency of blood and slaughter and human suffering.
You get that? The American people will not relish somebody growing fat in an emergency. Oh, but look at what happened with Halliburton. They made hundreds of billions of dollars. Look at what happened with Blackwater turned into a worldwide empire. You know, can you imagine? If we had had a president if George W. Bush, when he decided to get into these two wars, he'd said, yeah, we're going to go into two wars, but A, we're going to pay for them. He didn't. He put them on the national credit card. And B, there's not going to be any war millionaires. Or if Barack Obama came out and said that. And again, clip number six, these Republicans are using the war at the present emergency, World War II, as an excuse to try and cut social programs. And I'm not going to do it. You can scream about the deficit, the debt, the cost of war all day long. We are not going to roll back these programs. And he didn't roll them back. And that's why we had five generations of incredible wealth in the middle class in America.
Today's threat to our national security is not a matter of military weapons alone. We know of other methods, new methods of attack.
Yeah, now what are those new methods of attack? And he's talking about attacks on Social Security. He's not talking about what the Germans or the Japanese were doing.
There is an added technique for weakening a nation at its very roots, for disrupting the entire pattern of life of a people. And it's important that we understand it. The method is simple. First, discord. The dissemination of discord.
Tea party, can you say?
A group, not too large.
Not too large.
A group that may be sectional or racial or political.
Yeah, political, yeah.
Tea is party. Encouraged to exploit its prejudices through false slogans and emotional appeals. The aim of those who deliberately egg on these groups is to create confusion of counsel, public indecision, political paralysis, and eventually a state of panic.
And that's what they've, that's what they're doing right now, right? With all these front groups and all these people and Fox News and all this stuff. I mean, the absolute state of panic. Other countries, he says, have fallen because of this, but the Americans are not yet easy dupes. We are, and we're not going to fall for this whole class struggle, phony nonsense, and the new forces, the propaganda weak us. Do we have time for clip number 8? Oh, we got to go into the break. Okay. How long until the break? It's right now. Okay. Well, I've got one last FDR clip I want to play with you, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts on why is this young generation so badly economically screwed? The new figures just came out today. The post-Reagan generation is screwed. According to the latest census data, 37% of young families now live in poverty in America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And what can we do about this? I have a list. Do you? Suggestions? Give me a call. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes past the hour. Our question for this hour, why is this young generation screwed? And this is our lead story in the news. The post-Reagan generation is screwed. According to the latest census data, 37% of young families, defined by people who are under 30 years old, now live in poverty. That's more than one in three young families in America living in desperation. Highest level of poverty ever recorded for that group. The unfortunate situation young families stands in stark contrast to the low poverty rate of elderly families, just 5.7%. So, and representing these young families are the new young bucks like David Lewis, who wants to take on John Boehner in his district. Here's what David Lewis has to say, the Tea Party Republican who wants to primary challenge John Boehner, the Republican Speaker of the House.
Well, John Boehner is a socialist. I'm not calling him names. What I'm doing
socialist.
He's a socialist.
Now, come on. Now, that's a little extreme.
It's an economic policy. I'm not calling names, but here's somebody that refuses to phase out Social Security. What I would do as a U.S. House member is work to phase out Social Security totally, 100%. That includes Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps. These are socialist policies.
Socialist policies, unemployment insurance. We can't have this. So anyhow, the exact, you know, see, this is somebody, he's 26 years old. This is somebody who has no understanding of history and who I guarantee you, as I said, you know, if you said, you know, when, you know, what was the difference between the Wagner Act and the Taft-Hartley Act in 35 and 47? The Wagner Act established the right to unionize. In 35, all these laws were passed that gave workers rights, that established minimum wage. The minimum wage was established in 1935. That established minimum working conditions, that established the National Labor Relations Board, it just goes on and on and on, right? That created basically the foundation for an American middle class. And in 1947, Taft-Hartley took a whack at them, but, you know, not without some fights. And this is from May of 1940, May 26th, I think it was. Sue tracked it down. The actual clip, May 26th, 1940. This is one of the fireside chats of Franklin Roosevelt. I've played 7 clips. I'm going to play the last one, and then I'm going to take your calls on your thoughts on why this generation is screwed. I think they're screwed because we have stopped teaching American history. And young people don't know that people like Franklin Roosevelt fought against the David and Charles Kochs of their day, against the Republicans of their day, against the libertarians of their day, who wanted to say, oh, you know, you can't have social programs like Social Security. You can't have unemployment. You can't have a minimum wage. You can't have those things. We can't afford them. We're fighting a frigging war with the Germans and the Japanese. We have a present emergency. There's no way you can afford those things. This is the final, and Franklin Roosevelt, in this, he says, the Americans are not yet easily duped, right? Well, I think that this kid proves that the easy dupes now are around. And they're getting into politics on the Tea Party side. Anyhow, here's Franklin Roosevelt from his fireside chat.
Men can lose confidence in each other, and therefore lose confidence in the efficacy of their own united action. Faith and courage can yield to doubt and fear. The unity of the state can be so sapped that its strength is destroyed. All this is no idle dream. It has happened time after time in nation after nation during the last 2 years. Fortunately, American men and women are not yet easy dupes.
Not yet.
Campaigns of group hatred or class struggle have never made much headway among us and are not making headway now.
Well, at least not in the 1940s.
But new forces are being unleashed.
Ah, the billionaires.
Deliberately planned propagandas to divide and weaken us.
The Republicans.
In the face of danger, as other nations have been weakened before. These dividing forces, I do not hesitate to call undiluted poison.
Yeah, I call them un-American.
They must not be allowed to spread in the new world as they have in the old. Our moral, our mental defenses must be raised up as never before against those who would cast a smokescreen across our vision.
See, basically back then it was cast as fascism versus communism, and the fascists initially were the good guys because they wanted to stop the communists who did things like, you know, Social Security, right? And then we discovered that the fascists weren't such good guys either because we were fighting them in Germany and Italy. But the fact of the matter is that I would bet virtually anything that this kid who's taking on this kid, 26 years old, this young man, David Lewis, who's taking on John Boehner, has no idea of where these socialist programs came from. Ed in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Tom, hi. Your idea about why kids aren't organizing and grouping together as blocks to make social changes, I think that the main reason is they don't have like an Abby Hoffman or a JFK influencing them or leading them.
Well, we had, I think many, many young people believed that Barack Obama was going to be that person. And for 3 years, he did, you know, nice administrative stuff and good presidential stuff. And his speech in Egypt, which basically started the Arab Spring, was brilliant. And healthcare was very nice. But I don't disagree with you. We have lacked an inspiring and inspired leader, and hopefully Obama will get his mojo and become that. But I think it takes more than just a leader, because if you have a leader without historical context, without an understanding of what all this is about and where it came from, then you also have the potential to have a demagogue. You have the potential of somebody just, you know, running amok and doing wrong. But I don't know. Anyhow, we've got a bunch of calls here. Let's pick them up. Mark in Crystal River, Florida. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Great.
Tom, you know, I grew up between St. Louis and Chicago and Springfield, Illinois, and my grandfather was in the CCC camps in the 30s, and he later, and when it was too hot to work, I guess they would play baseball, and he became an umpire, in those camps, Tom. And then,
and they were paid for that, by the way, because that's how you stimulate an economy and you keep people out of poverty.
That's correct. And then he went on to become a professional umpire, and now he's in Cooperstown, and his name is Al Barlick. And then
really,
that's
great.
And actually, my father, Tom, he grew up in the projects there and worked his way out of that. And then he got a job with the after serving in the Marine Corps in the Korean War, for all the right wingers too scared to call the show, and raised his son Democrat. And my father went on to become the superintendent of the power plant, and then city director of personnel for the state capital of Illinois, Springfield. And then myself, seeing those values ahead of me, like Michael Moore, whose father was a Marine as well, and his grandfather was in the sit-down strike in Michigan in 37.
Yep.
I went and joined the Marine Corps, not looking for a fight, but to defend those values that were being robbed away from me practically as I enlisted. But I would just declare to you, and I'll get off the phone. In 1978, I'd been selected for embassy duty in Honduras, and I had a discussion with a fellow Marine, and I said to him, Mike, I can't believe you're voting for Ronald Reagan. He's not even a good actor. I said, I'm from Abe Lincoln's hometown. Everybody I know and all my parents' friends, my stepmom was a nurse, and my mother's a Dirksen, Tom, the pretty squared away family. I said, we're all voting for Jimmy Carter. And I believe he has a nuclear physics degree from the Naval Academy. Tom, I served 11 years in the Marine Corps. I volunteered for Beirut, and I currently have 12 years with the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. And I'm over here fixing a nuclear reactor building. I'm very proud to be part of 15 million union workers, and we're not really too worried about Breitbart's over 60 crowd with their squirrel rifle. So,
okay. Anyway, good on you, Mark.
I love you for what you do, Tom, and I'm very proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark. Very, very well said, and I appreciate it. Michael in Eureka, California. We have a minute to the break, Michael. What's up?
Oh, Tom, I'm just thinking, you know, that the young generation was a significant voting bloc in the last election for Obama.
It was huge.
It seems like they're zeroing in on that voting bloc. And misleading them, of course.
That's
and,
right.
Divide and conquer.
Yep. Exactly as FDR said that they would, you know, that they were trying to do in 1940. And he didn't let him do it because he went on the radio every week with his fireside speech and said, you know, this was number 15 of his fireside speeches.
And I'm hoping that Obama will do the same.
Yeah, or fireside chats, I guess, is what they call it, what he called them. But but just look at all the stuff that was packed into this one fireside chat. He said we can't do away with Social Security just to win a war. He pushed back against the Paul Ryans of his day. He said we can't do away with the minimum wage like they're suggesting just to end the just to fight the war. He said, in fact, we should expand Social Security, which Harry Truman, you know, when he died, his vice president became president. Harry Truman actually introduced single-payer national health care into Congress in 1947. Republicans control both the House and the Senate, so, of course, it didn't pass. But we actually had a president introduce a national health care program that FDR was advocating.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with this discussion, why is this young generation screwed? And what can we all do to help?
Talk to me.
You in the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. Why is this younger generation so badly economically screwed? And why is it that they don't understand how they got screwed? And in fact, they're proposing solutions that will make things even worse for themselves. Brian in Asheville, North Carolina, you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, Tom. I am 26 years old, and I've been listening to your show for almost a year now, right before the 2010 elections. And you've really helped me find my way back to progressive roots and have killed some of the libertarian paranoia that I've uncovered in the last 5 or so years. But so I'm 26, and I think I know a lot of the reasons why our generation has so many problems. And they're really most of the big talking points that you talk about. like labor, because, you know, well, labor and media, I think, are two big ones. You know, with the labor, most of our parents have been so busy working and trying to take care of family. They're sick and do their jobs, and they've not been, you know, had time to take care of themselves. And so there's a vicious cycle going on with that. You know, there's not much free time to really organize their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the media, you know, a few years ago, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I was getting so much information about this, you know, debt crisis early on that, like, it sort of mirrors what's going on with our whole society. You know, they want us to think, you know, there's just so many people in debt in general, and they want us to think that our country's in debt, and so we all have to, like, you know, give up all these things and,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that stuff like that.
Right, but God forbid we should do like Franklin Roosevelt did and raise taxes on the richest to 91 friggin' percent.
Exactly.
I mean, Obama's proposing to raise taxes on the rich back to where they were under Clinton, 3%, and the Republicans are going, oh, we can't have that, it'll kill the economy. Yeah, it is, you know, right. We had 91% taxes during the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, and things were just fine, thank you very much. In fact, it was the best, the three decades in the history of the United States when GDP growth averaged above 3%. The only time was when taxes on the top top one-tenth or one-hundredth of 1% were at 91%. Excellent points, Brian. Thank you very much for calling and making them. It's much appreciated. Don in Portland. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hi there.
Hey.
I think to answer the question is the reason that the people, or the younger people, or the younger generation are in a bad situation is because it's a suppression of information and a lack of opportunity.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. And the suppression. Go ahead.
What's also on my mind is Mr. Boehner coming out with a phrase called class war.
Yeah, yeah. This is what millionaires and billionaires always say when average working people say, "Why don't you guys pay the same taxes we do?"
Well, no. Isn't this another form of language manipulation? Because my comprehension of that phrase was basically people saying that the richer have to pay their share.
Right. Yeah. And
now he's using the words against people. He's using the same words against people.
You're absolutely right.
When you mentioned APR and war millionaires, isn't that the same thing? Now, couldn't we just call those contractors?
Yes, and they are. They absolutely are. And excellent point, Don. Thank you for that. Ken in San Francisco. Hey, Ken.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
Good.
First of all, I'll tell you, one of the things that I do, I've been a carpenter for a number of years, and I'm allowed by my union to write a little column in our organized labor newspaper, which is building trades newspaper in the San Francisco area. And when I write this column, I explain a lot of this stuff because even the news media out here, I mean, aside from your station, there's a few papers, even as liberal as this city is,
right.
They really don't give anybody a real good historical account of what happened or why things happened. And one of the big things, and I do, I get a lot of feedback from the young guys in the union, and it's really, really.
So you're helping educate them about the history.
Yes,
you know,
I try to. And a lot of those guys come up to me, and it's great. And, you know, it makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, I do it for free.
That's absolutely great. Ken, final point. I got a whole bunch of callers here, and I think I only have 3 minutes left in this hour, so I'd like to get through them.
Okay. Well, yeah, one of the points was the housing out here is just out of hand, and when it's that expensive, people can't afford to go on strike or fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and not only that, they've lost their unions, they've lost their, you know, they've lost job security. Even if they did go on strike, they get fired. There's, you know, the whole scab industry. But you're absolutely right, Ken.
That was perpetuated by the high tech industries that when they started up, they were all non-union and it kind
right.
of.
Yep. And now they're getting their comeuppance in that they're all moving offshore. And anyhow, thank you for the call. Keith in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Keith.
This is Keith, and I'm one of the co-founders of the movement Food Not Bombs. And as a result, I end up meeting all these young people when I speak at colleges. And one of the things they all talk about is how there isn't an Abby Hoffman these days and so on. And what I noticed was that there's really sophisticated, well-educated about these issues, pockets of college students and high school kids in every corner of not only the United States, but the world.
Yes.
And I'm really impressed by how much they know. And the big issue, I think, is that what I always tell them is that actually, you know, every college has a really active, progressive, and radical movement, but it's not on national TV, and people just don't know that this is happening in, you know, like Food Not Bombs. I guess received, what, about four or five requests to include new chapters in their, you know, schools, high schools, in their communities, and these kids are like out there every day collecting food, sharing it with the hungry, making relationships with people that are even more poor than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're depending on the food themselves, and it's just remarkable because it's a really huge movement. And it's what the
that's spectacular, Keith, and great on the Food Not Bombs. It's a great movement. Thank you very much. And you're right, there are a lot of young people who are well informed and who are waking up. We need more. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the second hour of our program. In the first hour at some length, we were walking through Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chat from May 26th, 1940, in which he was calling out the conservatives for using the present emergency, the impending war in Europe and in Asia and the economic hard times as an excuse to destroy Social Security. And it was eerie. And he also said this war, there will be no war millionaires. I'll share a few other clips with you as we, you know, once again, as we continue through the next 2 hours. But if you missed our first hour, just to give you an update on that. And the question was, and basically it started with this statistic that just came out of the Census Bureau, that according to the latest census, 37% of young families, about over a third of families headed up by people under 30 years old, are living in poverty today. It's the first time it's ever happened in the history of the census, keeping these statistics. This is the Great Depression all over again for young people. Why is this younger generation so badly screwed? And we're going to come back to that topic in a moment. But there are other subsets, shall we say, or subcultures within American culture that in some ways are supportive, actually, of this whole Republican notion that, you know, you're on your own and et cetera. And it, among them is the Christian patriarchy movement and the Quiverful movement. And Vicki Garrison is a former Christian patriarchy Quiverful mother with 7 children. She ran a newsletter for the movement, left it about 3 years ago. She runs the Take Heart Project, a nonprofit for other escapees. That website is takeheartproject.org, and also the nolongerquivering.com website, which I'm looking at right now. It tells all about this. Vicki, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, it's Vicki.
Okay. And tell us, what is Christian patriarchy and what is Quiverful?
Quiverful, I would say, is evangelical biblical family values on steroids. The basic premise goes from Psalm 127, which says, "Behold, children are a blessing from the Lord." It goes on to say that, like arrows in the hands of a mighty man, so are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who has his quiver full of them. And so that's where they get the quiver full. The basic idea is to be open to accepting as many arrows or blessings as the Lord wants to send your way. And so basically it's no birth control.
Right. And I think this is this has historically been used by the Catholic religion and by the Mormon religion to justify very, very large families.
Yes, and you know, it really, there's so much of this push in with the pro-life movement within evangelical Christianity, and this is just kind of the next step to say, well, not only do we not want to have what's been called the abortion mentality of, you know, aborting children, but we want to welcome, we want to accept, and even, you know, proactively procreate as many children. And basically, the premise is that you're raising up warriors for God's army.
And just as, by the way, this week, I believe it is, the planet hit its seven billionth person, which is pretty amazing when you think that when this nation was founded, there were only a quarter billion people on the planet.
I guess that makes me the mother of one billionth of the population.
How did you escape from this Christian patriarchy? Well, we haven't established what Christian patriarchy is. What's that?
Okay, the patriarchy part comes in, you know, the mainstream evangelicals believe that the husband is to be the head of the home, that he is the one to make the final decisions, he has the authority, and that the wife is to be submissive. But the Christian patriarchy movement takes it a step farther and says that the husband is basically spiritually in authority over the wife, that the God uses a hierarchy of authority, and that in order to have spiritual protection for the wife and for the children, they need to be in submission to that authority, which is the husband.
Does it also suggest, as some of the stories in the Bible do, that if the husband dies, the son takes over as the one who's in charge of the mother?
There is that teaching, too.
Yeah. And you grew up in this?
No. Okay. I actually didn't grow up in a Christian home. I became a Christian when I was 17, kind of as a way of escaping in the chaos of my own life. But I, you know, got into the church and I started hearing about biblical family values and you know, pro-life, pro-marriage, marriages between one man and one woman for life. And then it just progressed. It was actually when I got into homeschooling. I started homeschooling just kind of on a fluke because my daughter was, you know, way ahead. She is already reading, and she wasn't old enough for kindergarten, so I decided to homeschool her for a year and see how that went. And that's where I encountered books such as The Way Home by Mary Pride. The subtitle is Beyond Feminism and Back to Reality. Be Fruitful and Multiply by Nancy Campbell. These kind of books which were teaching about Quiverful and patriarchy.
And so homeschooling is the medium by which this kind of thought virus is most frequently spread around the country, as opposed to denominations.
I call it fertile ground, the homeschooling movement, because that's where you get the, you know, when you go to a homeschooling curriculum fair, you're going to find books that are, you know, math books, or science, creation science, of course, and revisionist history. And there are parents who are, you know, looking at those tables and getting the curriculum for their kids. But the booths that are filling up and where people are taking their money out are the ones that are selling a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. What they're selling is this protection for your family.
Right. And how did you I don't know if escape is the right word, or was there an element of escape?
For me, it was kind of a matter of desperation. I burned out. I mean, you have seven kids, and I was not cut out for childbearing. After our third, we decided I was done. I could not handle it anymore, and my husband had a vasectomy. And it wasn't until we encountered these teachings that then we got this conviction that we had taken, usurped God's place, and we decided that we needed to repent of that and restore, you know, give our fertility back into the Lord's hands. And so he went and had a reversal. And then we had four more. And every time it was just hell on my body. And so, you know, after a while I just lost my health and I wasn't able to keep up with the homeschooling and the home birthing and, you know, the whole thing. It was an impossible, unsustainable lifestyle.
And so that awakened, and now you help people who want to escape from these movements with NoLongerQuivering.com and TakeHeartProject.org?
Yes.
Okay. And are you finding, we have just a minute left here, Vicki, are you finding a lot of people who have been sucked in innocently into these, into the Quiverful and the Christian patriarchy movement who are looking to escape?
I think the majority of them actually dig in deeper and try harder. But there are some who come and, you know, they just get so desperate that finally they have to start questioning whether what they are basing their life on is really reality or if it's just this big fantasy that can't actually
happen. And are these movements associated with political parties at all? Is there a connection, for example, between them and the conservatives and the Republican Party that, you know, I'm hearing about?
Yes. Well, Dominionism is at the core of the, of, you know, Psalm 127 when it says, blessed is the man whose arrow or quiver is full of them. It
right.
goes on and says, they will not be ashamed, but will speak with the enemies in the gates. It's talking about dominionism.
So, and that means getting involved in politics.
Exactly.
Yeah, so these can be very highly political movements as well. Remarkable. Vicki Garrison, the website's nolongerquivering.com, takeheartproject.org. Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Remarkable. Right here in America, you just decide you want to homeschool your kids, and this is what you get sucked into? We'll be back. I got to share with you FDR and the No More Millionaires. Right. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's not just the Dominionists and the right-wing Christian crazies who are hell-bent on changing America to something that would be incomprehensible to the founders of this country who created a secular republic. It is people like David Lewis, who wants to run against John Boehner as a primary candidate in the state of Ohio. Here's what he had to say. John Boehner, the leader of the Republican Party right now, or the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, he's a socialist.
Well, John Boehner is a socialist. I'm not calling him names. What I'm doing
socialist.
Is
now, David, he's a socialist.
Dave.
Now, come on. Now, that's a little extreme.
It's an economic policy. I'm not calling names. But here's somebody that refuses to phase out Social Security. What I would do as a U.S. House member is work to phase out Social Security totally, 100%. That includes Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps. These are socialist policies.
Yeah, let's just roll back the 20th century. I mean, the entire 20th century. Why don't you roll back the woman's right to vote? That happened in 1920. Roll back the child labor laws. Those happened in 1917, got struck down by the Supreme Court, happened again in the 1930s. I mean, it's over. It's like, where do these people? Well, they just don't know. They just don't know. So Bill O'Reilly, he says, you know, if Obama raises the taxes too high, I'm just going to pack it in. This is Bill O'Reilly last night.
Here's the unintended consequence of Mr. Obama's revenue-enhancing plan. And I must tell you, I want the feds to get more revenue. I don't want to starve them, as some people do. But if you tax achievement, some of the achievers are going to pack it in. If Barack Obama begins taxing me more than 50%, which is very possible, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this.
Yeah, there you go. He's to hell with it. And so here's what Franklin Roosevelt had to say to people. By the way, FDR's tax was 91%. And it wasn't put into place by FDR, by the way. It was put into place by the Republican before him, Herbert Hoover. But he kept it there. And then, you know, the Democratic administration, FDR kept it there. Truman kept it there. Eisenhower kept it there. Kennedy kept it there. LBJ dropped it down to 74%, but closed the loopholes. So the rich paid even more. But anyhow, here's FDR's response to Bill O'Reilly.
A number of my friends who belong in the very high upper bracket have suggested to me on several occasions of late that if I am reelected president, they will have to move to some other nation because of high taxes here. Now, I will miss them very much. But if they do go, they will soon come back. Because a year or two of paying taxes in almost any other country in the world will make them yearn once more for the good old taxes of the USA.
There you go. Unless you're a war millionaire, FDR, you'll recall, fought and won World War II. And this is what clip 10, just to set this up. This is just a quick one from FDR about war.
The nation knows that I hate war.
Yeah. And that's very different than George W. Bush, who saw war as a political instrument they could use. Then FDR goes on to say this about war and war millionaires.
Our present emergency and a common sense of decency make it imperative that no new group of war millionaires shall come into being in this nation as a result of the struggles abroad. The American people will not relish the idea of any American citizen growing rich and fat in an emergency of blood and slaughter and human suffering.
And then FDR spoke to the Halliburtons and Blackwaters and, you know, fill in the blank, your favorite war contractor of his day, the people who live in the 30 and 40 bedroom mansions surrounding this town of Washington, D.C., in clip number 12, Jacob.
But while we guard our shores against threats of war, we will continue to remove the causes of unrest and antagonism at home, which might make our people more easy victims to those for whom foreign war is profitable. And note well that those who stand to profit by war are not on our side in this campaign.
Those who stand to profit by war are not on our side in this campaign. Oh, very interesting. Tell that to Dick Cheney. Did we play clip number 11 off the main clip sheet about war millionaires? We did. That was the one we just played. Okay. Here's clip 13. One more. I just love these FDR clips, and then we'll pick up your calls. FDR.
We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob.
There you go. You get it? I mean, you know, just laying it right out. Okay, with one-third of young people living below the poverty line, one-third of families where the members of the family are under 30 are now living under the poverty line. 37%. Unprecedented in American history. Are you worried about social unrest? Michael Bloomberg is. Back with your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Why is this young generation so screwed? And why are so many of them buying into libertarian and Republican notions that'll just make things worse for them?
For every stoplight I didn't make, every chance I did or I didn't take, all the nights I went too far, all the girls that broke my heart, all the doors that I had to close, all the things I knew but
34
I
minutes past the hour. Welcome back to your media support group for We the People. Tom Hartman here with you. Our crazy alert for the day. The police have finally put an end to a crime spree that was terrorizing Orlando, Florida, when they arrested a three-man robbery gang of drag queens. As the Orlando Sentinel reports, a man wearing a tank top and multicolored tights was spotted putting these items into a handbag: 5 packs of black feathers, 2 packs of red feathers, 2 packs of red lace gloves, 2 packs of black and red lace gloves, eyelashes, 5 bra pads, 5 butt pads, 5 gel inserts, as well as 3 handbags, 2 boas, 3 pairs of costume glasses, and 10 bandanas. As one eyewitness to the crime spree recalled, oh gosh, they could wipe out a whole section of boas in seconds. The men are charged now with felony retail theft, but they are sticking tight to their defense. They were merely doing the shopping for Michelle Bachman's husband. Yeah, no, I'm just made up that part. By the way, just a quick reminder. We just saw, got the public policy polling just came out. Elizabeth Warren is ahead of Scott Brown. That's pretty amazing. There are a couple of candidates that are really worth knowing more about and supporting. Elizabeth Warren is one. Bernie Sanders is the other. Bernie's website, his campaign website, because he's up for re-election, is bernie.org. I was at a fundraiser for Bernie Sanders on Friday, in fact, and proud to be there. Bernie.org is that website. And Elizabeth Warren's website is elizabethwarren.com. ElizabethWarren.com, and there's a nice little video on the homepage that tells all about that. So let me just plug those. And also over at freespeech.org, there is a petition that you can sign to spread the gospel of free speech TV into Comcast and AT&T and other cool places. So a lot going on. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, and Paul in California. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I'd like to talk about why the Republicans are winning. It's because basically we got dumbed down in the 80s when Reagan started off.
And I'm not disagreeing with you.
And you know, I mean, you can't educate these poor kids. Both families have to work so hard, both members of your family, that the parent gets the kid gets no guidance from his parents. So they go out and look for these outside sources. Well, kids that kind of want structure and kind of need that structure gravitate towards these religious groups, and then they get their brainwashed.
That's
what's happening.
And to a large extent, it's not just, and thank you, Paul, well said, it's not just the religious groups. It's like libertarianism is a cult. And objectivism is a cult. And increasingly, the Republican Party is becoming a cult. You know, they believe in something that there has never been objective proof or evidence for. That if you just do away with all government regulation and participation in the marketplace, somehow this magical marketplace is going to emerge and everything's going to be wonderful. And in fact, every time we've tried that, we've had an absolute disaster. An absolute disaster. Virginia and Portland. Hey, Virginia, what's up?
Hey, Tom, three quick things. I want to say about John Boehner being a socialist, if he were any further to the right, he would fall off the edge of his own flat earth.
Okay. That's nice.
I also want to say I'm really glad the Democrats are finally back on offense as of Obama's last two speeches. You can't score when you're playing defense.
Yeah, in fact, the headline over at TPM right now is Obama, no more compromising with Republicans, or words to that effect.
And my last thing is, I'm so sick of the left bashing Obama. We intentionally elected an evolved human being, and we've been dumping on him ever since he took office because he's not George Bush.
Yeah, well, he's not.
We didn't want a man to be a bully. We didn't want a man to be the thug that Bush was and to preempt Congress.
Yes.
And yet all we've done is bash him for not doing it. It's crazy. I'm way to the left of Obama, but he's the best president in my lifetime, and I'm not giving up on him yet.
Okay, good on you, Virginia. I'm not either, and I think that there's tremendous potential there. I still feel personally that Jimmy Carter was the best president of my lifetime, but, you know, that's a whole nother discussion. Well, Dwight Eisenhower, I don't know, my lifetime goes back quite a way. I have just the vaguest memories of, like, I was a little kid. Tony in New York. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm a first-time caller, and I have some good news and some bad news. First of all, I love your book, Legacy of Secrecy, about the JFK assassination.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to tell you that. The bad news is I'm a Teamster. I'm a sanitation worker in New York that supposedly bungled the snowstorm in the winter.
Yeah, that was the right-wing spin out of Fox.
Well, that's for sure. Now, I came home last week. I talked to my wife, who you've spoken to on the phone, and she dumped this bombshell in my lap about Senator Dick Durbin is authoring a bill. It's in committee now that the big pharmaceuticals want to take over all the action on the natural supplements and the vitamin.
Yeah, I know. Henry Waxman, who's a good guy on everything else, has been beating that drum in the House of Representatives for a long time. I don't understand why the Democrats are on board with this. Weirdly enough, the champion for they're continuing to exist, an herbal industry and a vitamin industry continuing to exist, is Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
He's the good guy, the Republican from Utah.
These two things actually helped me and my wife, especially my wife. She went to 21 doctors, found out she had adrenaline fatigue, and we went to an herbalist, and he's helped her, and she's actually functional again. The other part of it is that I have a prescription drug plan. Now, if everybody, I tell these guys on my job, if your child needs a Flintstone chewable now, you're going to have to go to a doctor. My union will not be able to deal with all these prescriptions coming in, this reimbursement plan that I have. They're going to crash and burn. Yeah. And the prescription drug plan is going to be about as worthless as Confederate money.
Yep. Nope. Tony, you're absolutely right. And we need to be pushing back on that. And thank you for the call. Although I would like to stick with this question of, you know, why is this younger generation screwed? Why don't they realize it? And why are so many of them cleaving to things like the Quiver movement, the Christian Dominionists movement, the Christian Patriarchy movement, the Libertarian movement, the Objectivist movement, all of these basically right-wing cults. And Dave in Arizona, you have some thoughts on that.
Hello?
Dave, you are on the air. Hello? Dave in Arizona? Apparently not. Okay, Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
How you doing? I got actionable proof that the Republicans are not very smart. They're talking about taking away the social safety nets, you know, Social Security.
Yep.
People are losing their homes through predatory lending,
yep.
And they promote the Second Amendment and make it easier for people to own guns.
Right.
Now, you put guns in the hand of somebody who's hungry, losing his home, and doesn't have medical help for his children. Social unrest is inevitable.
Well, and that's what thank you for that. That's this article in the BBC News magazine this week. The headline, Could World Social Unrest Hit America's Streets? It's by Daniel Nashaw. And the subhead is New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has suggested that the unrest that rocked the streets of Cairo and Madrid this year could spread to the U.S. Is he right? I think entirely possible. Steve in Phoenix. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Is this Tom?
Yeah, you're on the air, Steve.
Good morning, Tom. We've got a bad connection here, so it's hard for me to I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
Okay, terrific. Just wanted to touch on the estate tax, but before that, I was really saddened to know that when you were in Madison that none of the major networks did cover the rally at the Fighting Bob Fest. This is terrible.
Yeah, it's like 8 to 10,000 people, and not a peep.
I'm sorry?
It was like 8 to 10,000 people, you know, progressives showing up, and not a peep in the national media. I guarantee you, if Sarah Palin had 300 people around her, it would be on the news.
Agreed. Where I wanted to go with the estate tax, wasn't that repealed for 2010?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. This year,
and
actually.
It has not been brought back, and I think the Republicans held our President Obama hostage during the last holiday negotiations.
They did. They did with the if he wanted to extend the unemployment benefits for another year, they wanted to extend the Bush tax cuts and the estate tax cut for another 2 years, I believe it was. I think the estate tax cut was tied to that. So.
Yeah, this is just another tragic example of a lot of revenue being lost. George Steinbrenner of the Yankees, I believe, passed on in 2010. Left, you know, there was an enormous estate there that just passed straight through without any revenue there.
Right.
You know,
I call it the Paris Hilton tax. The Paris Hilton tax right now is zero. So if you happen to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, hey, you just hit the jackpot. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. Well said. Brian in Massachusetts. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Superb stuff on FDR. Just keep playing it right up till the election, and maybe, just maybe, some people will get the idea. But I will be voting for Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts.
Good.
Because, again, certainly I believe in, you know, what Warren's already been saying, all the things she supports. The reason I call was that, once again, the Republicans revived an old tactic, and that's trying to attempt to label the other people, their adversaries, exactly of what they're guilty of. And you've demonstrated that with the FDR, that they're guilty. They have been guilty of class warfare for quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. The Republicans, unfortunately, became the party of the wealthy and the party of the owners. And they have been fighting class warfare since the work times of the Great Depression, the times of when we wanted the right to vote, when we wanted every progressive type of thing. The Republicans have come forward to fight it with class warfare, trying to say the working people don't deserve. If they can't survive, I mean, we were born into wealth, or we ripped off and stole our wealth. But if the working people, the average person, cannot survive,
you
let
got
them die.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll check in with the Talk Ready News Service and take more of your calls right after this, 45 minutes past the hour. It's Talk Media for the sane among us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. Let's check in with Ken Bazinet with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, Ellen Ratner's site to help impoverished communities in Sudan. And, Ken, what's going on in the world?
How are you, sir?
Good. What's up?
Well, some good news, I think, for President Obama. Progressives like Michael Moore are saying that maybe the liberal wing of the party will come home. They're liking what they heard, obviously, with the $1.5 trillion plan for raising revenue.
Yep.
And along with the $3.2 trillion in predicted budget savings there. It's a big issue, as you can imagine, for the president. A year out from the election, he has had to do some base hardening, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
An awful lot of folks on different issues have sort of moved away. And also I'm hearing today from some folks that what took him so long. But, of course, I think it was his plan. When I say think, I'm told it was his plan to wait until after Labor Day before he went directly at the Republicans. He has finally irked Eric Cantor to the point of Cantor today is quoting President Obama regarding how it's a bad idea to raise taxes in the middle of a recession, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just out today. Cantor made that comment just a short while ago. That's not a surprise, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, the president's going to go around the country, as you know, Tom, to sell this plan, and he's got some good news today. National Journal has a poll out that shows only 28% of Americans think spending cuts are the way to go. In and of themselves.
Right.
And a slightly larger majority obviously says, no, you have to create revenue streams, and spending cuts at the same time. So,
what I find amazing is
some districts and sell that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This morning, just walking through a room, NPR was on, and they said, they were just teasing the next segment, and they said, and so and so is going to come on and talk about President Obama's tax increases on the rich. And, you know, they're using the Frank Luntz language on NPR. President Obama has not proposed tax increases on the rich. He has proposed that the rich pay the same level of taxes as working people.
Right.
And there is a substantial difference between those two frames. And it just blows my mind that even the so-called liberal radio media of NPR has been repeating over and over again this, it's tax cut, raise taxes on the rich. No, it's raise taxes on the rich to the level that the rich are paying the same as working people.
Right. I think if you look at some of the language, of course, class warfare being the phrase du jour,
right.
I think it signals panic.
Yeah, I think so
on the
too.
Side of folks, because a majority of Americans are going to get this, and if President Obama really goes out to try to sell this, he can do it. And I think a lot of people can see that.
Wait a minute. He can? You mean he can get the Republicans to pass a tax increase through the House of Representatives?
I'm sorry. He can take it to the court of public opinion and put pressure on the Republicans and perhaps cost them at the polls next year.
Yeah.
There's no way.
I'm with you on that.
That the Tea Party is going to – nothing has changed since the debt ceiling debacle. I think we all know that.
Except that Obama has grown a spine.
Yes, exactly. I'll tell you, the other thing I'm picking up today from progressive wing of the Democratic Party, they are really happy that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is behind them.
It expired at midnight last night. Yeah,
yeah, and, you know, there was a Navy lieutenant up in Vermont. I'm sure you know this story. They started their ceremony at 11:45 p.m. Eastern Time,
mm-hmm.
and it ended a short time later when they were declared husband and husband. And that's getting some play today.
Yeah.
That was somebody who wanted to make a statement rather largely and quickly, obviously.
Yeah.
The big news, I think, of the day really now is up in New York at the United Nations. Mahmoud Abbas is having meetings today with the leaders of France, the foreign minister of Great Britain, and his deputies are meeting with their counterparts as well. Right. A majority of the United Nations is in favor of statehood.
Well, it was almost a year ago this week. It might have been exactly a year ago this week that President Obama gave a speech calling for Palestinian statehood within a year.
That's right. That's right. And there's a lot of material for these folks to use, not the least of which, obviously, is the United States getting on the right side of the Arab Spring pro-democracy freedom movement.
Right.
And I think there's been some rebuilt goodwill there on the part of the United States, but it could all come to a screeching halt if the U.S. indeed has to lay down a veto at the U.N. Security Council.
Yeah, and this is a real problem for us. And also, you go back and you look at this guy who wrote the book Killing the Cranes. I had him on for a half hour on our TV show last week, or the week before last. And he lived in Afghanistan on and off for 30 years. You know, knew Osama bin Laden and all these other guys. And he said that to a man, the people who were flying the planes on 9/11, the suicide bombers basically, were primarily motivated by the Israel-Palestine issue.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that we've got to clean up.
Right?
We've got to be part of cleaning up. I know that the United States can't do it alone. And Tom Friedman wrote a startlingly good editorial. I'm usually a very strong critic, a harsh critic of Tom Friedman's. But a great op-ed a couple days ago about how the Netanyahu administration has been so incompetent on this issue.
Right. And I'll tell you, it's obviously President Abbas is moving forward here, but in sort of an 11th-hour plea, Bibi Netanyahu now says he's ready to get back to serious negotiations.
Good.
You know, so there is a play to be made there, but I think they're going to have to put something else up at the table.
Yeah.
Now,
but it's you know, I think it's really important for the future of Israel as a state.
They're isolated.
I know.
If the UN General Assembly takes this vote, Israel will find out how alone it is in the world. And
well, I think they already.
A good thing.
I think they already know. And you know, nobody wants them to negotiate away their state, and they shouldn't.
Right.
And on the other hand, and they should have a strong defense. On the other hand, there has to be a resolution. You know, the West Bank and Gaza and a greater Palestine has to somehow work so that the temperature in the region can drop, and this festering sore can go away.
If you dine out on being the original democracy in the Middle East, you should embrace other democracies. And
yeah.
That would be the right move for them to do.
I would think so, too. I'm not sure that Mr. Netanyahu would agree, but maybe. We'll see where he goes with it. Ken Bazinet with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, sir. Be well.
Yeah, you too. Good talking with you. And up next, Seton Motley is going to come on, and we're ready to be being fit. Well, not quite, but I'll tell you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
6 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Troy Davis's appeal was turned down yesterday. He is scheduled to be executed tomorrow. It looks like this is the end of the line, that the United States is about to execute an innocent, probably innocent man, almost certainly innocent man. About the only witness who hasn't recanted is the guy that pretty much everybody else is saying committed the murder. So anyway, that, and we've been talking for a couple of hours here about the situation. Now, this census report just came out. The number of people, the number of families, young families, where the members of the family are under 30, who are living in poverty, is just 37%, highest it's ever been in recorded history, in the history of the census. 30 years of Reaganomics, doing just great for us, isn't it? You know, why is the young generation impoverished relative to their seniors? And now, in the midst of this, you know, we're here we are, the great Bush crash echoes on that in 30 years of Reaganomics. And so Mayor Rahm Emanuel is saying to the good citizens of Chicago, if you want, or not to the good citizens, the good employees, the city workers, city employees, you're going to have to take a fitness test. And if you are overweight, since obesity is a big problem, if you're not in physical shape or in good shape, You have a choice. You can either sign up for a fitness program and get fit, or you can pay an extra $50 a month. Fraternal Order of Police says their members, the union for the police officers, says, you know, we have different health concerns, like being shot at, and we don't want our members to pay higher premiums if they decide not to enroll in this exercise program or whatever it is. So which way should that come out? This is an interesting one because there's a lot of different ways you could look at this. Seton Motley is with us, the president of Less Government. His Twitter is at Seton Motley, S-E-T-O-N-M-O-T-L-E-Y, and at Less Gov, C-D-L-V-T-C-4. And his photo on our plasma, those of you watching, is you were a model, Seton, some years ago?
Yes. I was a musician, and I got some gigs modeling, and that led to five movies I was in, and so, yeah.
Holy cow. We got a rock star on here with us. Okay.
Back on the day.
So, Seton, the response, the take that I have of yours on this is doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, first of all, if you don't like it, go work for someone else. Second of all,
right.
Of all the municipal workers to complain about this, the cops who have to run down criminals are the ones that are to come out in opposition to this.
Well,
really?
You know,
really, that's the classic joke.
Okay, so you're defending this program. You're defending this program. You're defending Rahm Emanuel saying, "Hey, you got to go to the exercise classes or pay the $50."
As an employer, yes, I'm defending his right as an employer. Yes.
Okay, and I'm saying, how do you know that this program is the program that's going to get people fit? I mean, you know, I'm a vegan. I mean, I think, frankly, that does a whole lot more for somebody than being a than working out, than pumping up or dancing with a bunch of people in the mornings.
Well, look, if you don't like it, go work for someone else. The employer has the right to do what he wants.
Okay, so you're saying the city of Chicago has the right to mandate this $50 a month thing?
Well, cost more if you're out of shape anyway.
So do you think that the health insurance companies in America should be right now? Typically, if you have a group, most people are members of groups. If you have a group policy, the same price for everybody. Do you think that? Health insurance
should not be the same price for everybody.
Companies should have the right to say, okay, Seton, you've got high blood pressure, so you're going to cost an extra $300 a month.
Yes, absolutely.
And
we do it everywhere else.
Okay.
If I use $500 worth of bandwidth instead of $50, the Internet company has the right to charge me more for using more bandwidth.
Well, let's look at the law of unintended consequences here, because we're not talking about bandwidth here. We're talking about human lives, and we're talking about human health. If people look at this and they go, you know, $50 a month is a lot of money, and I'm not going to pay that and go along with the program, and they end up uninsured.
Well, that's their own damn fault.
And then it costs us all when they have a heart attack and they're not insured and they show up in the ER.
Zero sympathy for self-inflicted wounds, man.
No, it costs you and me when they show up in the ER. Because they didn't go along with the program.
Well, then they should be forced to pay it back once they show up.
So you're in favor of government mandates?
No, I'm in favor of people paying their bills. The government forces all kinds of debtors be forced to pay back their debts.
So you're saying that if somebody is living an unhealthy lifestyle, their insurer should charge them more.
Absolutely.
Even if that causes them to get more unhealthy.
It doesn't cause them to do anything.
Society even more.
They're adults that make adult decisions. No one forces them to do anything. Put the fork down and slowly back away. That's their choice, whether they do that or not.
Don't you think, though, that there is a reasonable argument to be made that these decisions should be, and I'm not, frankly, I'm very ambivalent about this. I could argue either side of this, but that Mayor Rahm Emanuel is saying, okay, this program by this $50 a month, this is going to save the city $500 million in their health care bill because fewer people are going to be sick. Now, that supports your position that city workers should be forced to pay the extra $50.
Well, no, I'm not predicting that. What I'm saying is the insurance business is a game of actuarial tables.
I'm not talking about the insurance business. I'm talking about public health. The public health business.
I don't care about public health. I care about my health and my family's health.
Well, you're part of the public, Seton. And if the guy sitting next to you.
It doesn't mean I have to pay for them.
If the guy sitting next to you has TB, or the guy driving down the street who has a heart attack while he's driving and runs into you and injures you because he wasn't taking good care of himself, then all of a sudden the public health is your issue.
Yes, but does he have insurance?
Well, if he's already run into you, do you give a damn?
If he runs into me, does he have Geico? Does he have State Farm?
Do you care? I mean, wouldn't you rather not be run into? Wouldn't you rather not get tuberculosis from a guy sitting next to you? The fastest, you know, this week we hit 7 billion people on planet Earth. A billion of them have tuberculosis right now. Do you really want that guy sitting next to you because we don't have health insurance available to us?
If he's going to be a deadbeat, he's going to be forced to pay for being a deadbeat.
Why not just have the city pay for everybody's health insurance as part of it?
Because it doesn't work. Because then you end up standing in line for 8 months to get a checkup.
But the city is paying for everybody's health insurance who works.
No, they're not. Just the employees, and they're charging more for.
That's what I just said. For the people who work for the city.
Yeah, and if they work for the city, and the insurance runs the actuarial tables and says. Cop A is going to cost more than Cop B, then charge Cop A more.
What if somebody has a genetic condition? What if they're genetically more inclined to have heart disease? They should pay more?
Pay more, too.
Yeah, because they're not a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. They're a member of the Unlucky Sperm Club.
No one's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club.
I would say if you're white in America, you're member one. If you're born into a rich family, you're member one and two.
There isn't the Lucky Sperm Club. There's a bunch of Lucky Sperm Clubs. Everybody's got advantages. Everybody's got disadvantages. Life isn't fair. The moment people, the sooner government officials and leftists realize it and stop trying to legislate it, the better off we all will be.
So the people who are born with a genetic predisposition, we know, for example, African Americans are more inclined toward certain types of cancers and heart disease. They should pay more for insurance because they're African American. Absolutely.
No question at all. None. Zero.
Okay. This is blowing my mind. I don't see how, if you want to live in a society that works, you could go down that road. But I do.
Works better when everybody pays for themselves.
But I do understand your logic, Seton Motley. At Seton Motley. Thank you, Seton.
Thank you, sir.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So is Rahm Emanuel right? Wrong? Crazy? Crazy like a fox? And what's going to happen to the next generation living in poverty? Yes. Jacob informs me this is the workout theme that Rocky used to work out to. So for the police officers in Chicago, the mayor is coming to get you. I don't know. It's like I said, I could argue either side of this. I could, but I'm inclined to say that if you want to deal with the public health issue of obesity, if you look at, and I didn't get around to bringing this up with Seton, I probably should have. If you look at France, there was an interesting piece in the New York Times that France, all around the world, countries are starting to struggle with obesity just like we are here in the United States. And it seems to be following the explosion of the fast food industry, and particularly the infiltration of the fast food industry into our schools. And so France kicked all the fast food stuff, all the crap food, all the candy, all the soft drinks out of their schools a couple of years ago. So that's it. You guys are out of here. Nationwide. And they are now uniquely the country in Europe that has a generation of children who are not in increasing numbers becoming obese. So, who knows? Adam in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hey, Adam, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I had 2 points I wanted to talk with you. With the Living Within Our Means and Investing in the Future Act bill, there's a part in there that kind of contradicts, I thought, President Obama's view on our energy future, which was the geothermal leases, increasing those, and then also where he wanted to give $10 billion for 2 or 3 new nuclear generating reactors. And the second part of it, if you could give me, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if the Republicans keep blocking President Obama on everything, do you know what his limits are as far as executive order and what he could push through just on that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for the call, Adam. His limits are that he can only spend money that has been appropriated, and he can only create agencies at the cabinet level or below, or from the cabinet level, that have been authorized by Congress. Now, there's an awful lot that he can do within existing agencies, and, you know, moving money around, reallocating things, and that presidents have historically done. But the Constitution is very clear that for taxation and spending, it has to come from Congress. So he has some substantial limits on those issues. Paul in Everett, Washington. Hey, whoop, click the button, Tom. Hey, Paul, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I was just listening to you talking about the young people in this country that are being screwed by our policies and why they don't get it. And it just seems to me that listening to your last guest, it was, you know, he refuses to acknowledge that there's anything complicated, complex, subtle, nuanced going on, and insists on simple, easy answers that anybody that sound like, quote, common sense,
right,
but are in fact, you know, they're just simple-minded. They're not simple. And I think that that's a result, or at least in part, you know, we have 473 cable channels. Every kid over 12 has an iPhone. And if you go and watch an action flick at the movie theater these days, the fast cuts and editing are about 3 seconds long. And so nobody has an attention. We've been programmed to have an attention span of about 4 seconds.
Right, and it's been gradually.
And Republicans have 4 second answers to everything.
Yeah, and it's been gradually changing over the years. If you go back and look at movies made 30 years ago, then you may look at movies made 50 years ago, or television, older television programs, and you'll see that they'll hold a shot for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, in some cases 30, 40 seconds, a minute and a half. And now you're right, in TV, 7 seconds is the absolute limit. And
it's hard to watch. I mean, it's even watching sports on TV, you see highlights reels like that. And for me, you know, I'm an old guy, apparently, at 47. I can't watch them.
Yeah. My old friend Ned Halliwell, professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, says we have become an ADD-agenic society. We're making ourselves ADD. Paul, thank you very much for the call. And interesting and good point, I believe. David in Chama, Arizona. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom, this is Dave.
Mm-hmm. You're on the air, Dave.
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to bring up the arrows in your quiver issue. I grew up in the Mormon religion, and I'm the second of 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that religion teaches these values, which instill poverty in a lot of their members.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I have a sister that, after her third kid, had a mental breakdown and was institutionalized.
Ouch.
I'm sorry, this is kind of hard for me, but they gave her electroshock therapy because she was fighting the patriarch way, and it's never been the same. So I just wanted to bring that up. Because when people think about Mormons, they don't know this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about the experience of your sister, David. But you know, this is what I've heard as well. I know very little about Mormonism, never having been inside it. But that you know, this idea that the more kids you have as a father, the more likely you are to get into heaven, and you know, I mean that. Went on steroids with Warren Jeffs and his Mormon breakaway cult, the FSLSD or LDS or whatever.
Yeah, in fact, my aunt was a member of that church.
Yeah, oh my.
She denounced it after a while. She's still a Mormon, but she's not a fundamentalist Mormon.
Yeah, yeah.
And that whole culture still exists in our society. And people, you know, they see it on TV, but they don't really understand it because they know so little about it.
Right, yeah. It's
anyways, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you very much, David. I appreciate the call. We have just 30 seconds to the break, Jacob. Do you have a FDR clip that we can share with folks? I would. We're out of time. Okay. We've been doing FDR clips all day. I love hearing from this guy. He's like, And I'm loving the fact that President Obama is starting to talk like him. He has occasionally in the past, but even more now. So anyhow, and ElizabethWarren.com, Bernie.org, check it out, freespeech.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And, of course, for the Daily Stack, every single story we do, our free app, all that stuff, it's all over at TomHartman.com. Be the good, the bad, and the very, very pot valiantly ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Congressman Charlie Rangel. Yesterday, Rick Perry decided to hold a private little meeting with business leaders in Harlem, the home district of Congressman Rangel. So Rangel decided he'd stop by to see what Perry is up to in his hometown. The guilty grin, Rangel told reporters he had no idea it was a Republican event, but that he heard one of the community leaders had invited a distinguished guest to my city and specifically to my congressional district. Rangel then went on to rain on Perry's parade by saying, the governor could come back to our district anytime he wants because his visit only reinforces the need for us to rally around the president's plan to reduce the deficit in a fiscally responsible way. Maybe Rick Perry will take a hint and keep his bad ideas in Texas. The bad, Britt Hume. The Fox so-called news talking head went on the O'Reilly Factor to whine about President Obama's class warfare strategy of making billionaires pay their fair share. Hume said, some Democrats would rather have everybody equally poor than equally rich. You do get that sense because of their obsession with this question of inequality. If inequality is at such a very higher level, who cares? Well, Brett, maybe the 46 million Americans who are living in poverty today care. Amazing the insensitivity that comes out of two millionaires talking to each other. And the very, very ugly Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Leave it up to the second most powerful man in our government to compare the entire government to a drug addict. In response to President Obama's deficit reduction plan put forward yesterday, Boehner said, at a time when spending is out of control, giving the federal government more money would be like giving a cocaine addict more cocaine. Right. Because cocaine addicts use cocaine to fund schools and fire departments and police departments, keep families out of poverty, and support our nation's military. In fact, under Republican leadership, I think I'd trust a coke dealer's sense of compassion more than John Boehner's and Eric Cantor's. That's very, very ugly. So, and you know, frankly, pretty amazing when you get to the whole thing. Oh, my. Beverly in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Beverly, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, and thanks for listening to AM 1350. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I've been enjoying the FDR clips. I especially like the one that I heard at the end talking about the government by organized money that we have. And I, in my view, I think it's not just the young people who are in trouble in this country. I think we're all in trouble. And I think it's because both of our political parties and the mainstream media are controlled by corporate interests. And I mean,
to a large extent, yeah.
I've been struck by the fact that we could argue for a long time about Obama's record and how well he's done. Certainly he's no FDR, and he's not defending the entitlements like FDR. I think and the reason is, I think the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are bought and sold.
He is defending the entitlements.
I heard
and
you
he
say
is...
not long ago that you considered yourself a Democratic Socialist,
yeah.
Which is basically what I would consider myself. And I'm just wondering now, I've been voting for 40 years for the Democratic Party, even though they're nowhere near my real politics. At this point, you know, I'm 61 years old. I'm really thinking there's got to be some alternative to that. Maybe we need a new progressive party. Maybe we need more than two or three parties. Maybe
I think we have three parties right now. We have four, if you include the Green Party. The Green Party has not done what the Tea Party did, though. And frankly, I think that they should. The Tea Party created itself as a standalone political party and then inserted itself into and took over a large part of the Republican Party. And the Green Party's strategy has been to always disassociate themselves from the Democrats and, in fact, run against them. And you know, that's their choice. They can do whatever they'd like. But I would rather see them doing what the Tea Party is doing. Or if a party gets created, and Beverly, thanks for the call and raising the issue. If another party gets created on the left, see that party step into the Democratic Party the way that the Tea Party has stepped into the Republican Party. Because the structure is already there. You got a multi-million-dollar structure. You got all these people. You got all this organization nationwide. Why not step in and take it over? Sam in West Virginia. Hey, Sam, what's up?
Hey there, Professor Hartman, and greetings to Dean Louise and Jacob.
Okay, thank you. What's up?
I'm calling about the truth.
Okay.
I'm calling about I've been working for you guys. I know I'm not on the payroll or anything.
That's true.
I wanted to tell y'all something. Y'all helped me recover from a brain injury I had when I was in a coma whenever you picked my brain.
Okay.
Really? Seriously?
All right.
Pick your brain. That's what I...
Okay.
So,
Sam, what's your point for today?
Okay, my preference today is John Boehner. What he said last weekend about job creators being on strike.
Right.
What kind of crap?
Yeah.
You know, us baby boomers are going to have to teach our kids to get off all the sports and things and get back into politics.
Yes, I'm absolutely with you, Sam, and that's yeah. Yeah, the younger generation. Yeah, I think the younger generation is starting to figure it out. Thanks a lot for the call. Kim in Downers Grove, Illinois. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that with the Rahm Emanuel new insurance thing,
mm-hmm.
I think it would work much better if you did it basically the exact opposite. They did it in the 90s. I worked for the Department of Corrections in Illinois. We had incentives. You were always going to pay this amount for your insurance, but if you did different incentives that time, you know, health care, whatever, working out, you got a rebate.
Yeah, that's actually how it works with my insurance company, is if you can show that you've had an annual physical and that you've that you don't smoke and there's a couple of things, then you get a lower price.
Yeah.
Or you're eligible for a better plan.
And that puts it back into the person's hands where they're not being punished because, oops, I don't live perfect.
Yeah.
Also, in 2007, I ended up with uterine cancer.
Ouch.
No one in my family's ever had it. Stage 1A, thought I was great, got the hysterectomy, went from there. Unfortunately, I ended up with a lot of complications. So within a year between medicine and being sedentary, I gained 100 pounds. If I went along with the gentleman's way of thinking, I guess I should have just shot myself or something.
Yeah, or paid a whole bunch more. Yeah, no, I get it, Kim, and that's the thing. People are not always in control of their lives, frankly. In fact, I think that we wildly overestimate, both at an individual level and a collective, a societal level, how much control we have over our lives. You know, luck happens, bad luck happens. Stuff happens, you know, the various bumper stickers and the circumstances and vicissitudes of life should not be something that drives a person into poverty or into a situation where if they get sick they're going to die because there's no alternative. Kim, thank you for the call. Very well said. Bruce in Stansbury Park, Utah. Hey, Bruce, you wanted to defend the Mormon religion.
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to say, you know, there's a lot of people that have left the church, and they seem to make it a life mission to bash the church publicly.
Well, the woman we had on was not a Mormon and had nothing to do with Mormonism. She was part of the Protestant Christian.
No, I was talking about the guy that called and said he was the second of seven children.
Okay, yeah.
And talked about the patriarchal order.
Is it not an order of...
I've been a lifelong member of this church. I'm 60 years old. I have never heard anyone say, by having more children, you go to heaven.
Oh, really?
Not once.
Okay.
That is not a church position. And the
are you sure?
Shock treatment that he talked about with his sister, that may have been something his family did, but that was not something that the church would take a position on.
Yeah, I would be surprised if any church would order something like that. And although if a family is part of a cult, I mean, he was talking about part of his family was a member of this, you know, the Warren Jeffs cult.
Right.
And I would assume that you would agree with me that that is a cult.
Yeah, I think that is. You know, there's a lot of talk about who's a Christian and who's not. The Catholics say it all comes from the council at Nineveh, is it?
Nicaea.
Nineveh.
Oh, Nineveh.
And anyone that wasn't there to represent themselves as Christian, they weren't or aren't.
Yeah.
Personally, I think anyone that believes in Jesus Christ is a Christian. That's
That's the thing about Christianity is there are so many different ways to self-identify. And
I don't think anyone is going to be kept out of heaven if they're Islamic or Jewish or Catholic or Baptist, Protestant.
I think in that regard, you may be disagreeing with your own religion, although...
No, I'm not. My religion teaches that everyone will go to heaven,
uh-huh.
except a few that will be cast out into outer darkness, and they can be counted on the fingers of one hand.
I see. Okay.
And that would be people possibly like Cain.
Who?
Cain, who killed Abel.
Oh, Cain. Yeah, okay.
Hitler, maybe?
Yeah, okay.
I don't even think Judas would be cast out.
Yeah, well, there's a theory that Judas, that was a deal that they had to, so that, you know, the prophecy could be fulfilled. But, Bruce, I will have to leave the rest of the theology debate for another time. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. Oh, I'm sorry. You were going to say something. I cut you off. But we just have a minute here, so I wanted to get one more call in before the music hits. Alita in Tennessee. Hey, Alita, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yes, I was calling. I really enjoy your show. But about the IOUs and the Social Security so-called lockbox.
Yeah. There's...
Now, if I owe someone, I eventually will have to collect the IOU by paying it.
That's right.
Why doesn't anyone bring this up and collect these outstanding debts?
Well, those IOUs are called Treasury bills, and they do get redeemed by the, we're right on the edge of starting to pay out of that Social Security Trust Fund. And when the Social Security Administration needs money, it will take those Treasury bills to the United States Treasury Department and redeem them, just like the Bush family does when they want to redeem the IOUs that their children are born with as part of their trust funds. So not to worry, Ellie, but it's gonna work out. Thank you so much for the call, though. I mean, that's basically what it is. Up next, Brian Evans with Amnesty.org and Troy Davis.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're going to find out about the Troy Davis situation, if at this late moment, if there's still anything that can be done.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Yes, well, yes and no. Maybe the word would be justice. Is justice coming to the United States? Brian Evans with AmnestyUSA.org. Amnesty International USA is on the line with us. Campaigner in the Troy Davis case and the campaign to abolish the death penalty with Amnesty International. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I understand Troy Davis's appeal before the Georgia Board of, what is it,
Pardons and Paroles.
Yesterday was turned down, which means that he is scheduled for execution tomorrow, even though all but two of the witnesses against him have recanted their testimony, one of those two being the guy that everybody else says did it, and that there is absolutely no physical evidence or DNA or murder weapon or anything to associate this guy with this crime. They're still going to put him to death. Do I have all that right?
You have that about right, yes. And it was really an appalling decision when you have a case, and one of the reasons so many people have latched onto this case, it's just so obvious that there's a problem here, and the only people that can't seem to see it are the people in the Georgia justice system.
So is there any last-minute option that our listeners and viewers can do? I mean, is it a call to the governor's office, call to the Supreme Court? I mean, is there anything that we can do?
I mean, we're encouraging people to continue to, write or call the Board of Pardons and Paroles and also the district attorney in Savannah who could ask for the judge who signed the death warrant to vacate the death warrant just to give Georgia more time to rethink their decision to go down this terrible path. But in terms of, realistic options to stop this execution, I think we're probably out.
Who is the district attorney in Savannah?
District attorney, his name is Larry Chisholm. We have an action up on our website. If you go to justicefortroy.org, you'll find the action there.
Okay. And so justicefortroy.org would be the website to use.
That's the easier one to remember.
Yeah, justicefortroy.org. And this is... I'm assuming that at some point his case had been before the Supreme Court and they simply decided they chose not to hear it?
What the Supreme Court did in 2009 was actually kind of extraordinary. He submitted what's called an original habeas petition,
right,
which hadn't the court had not granted one of those in over 50 years, and they actually gave Troy Davis a hearing based on that down in Savannah. But the standard that the judge was told to use was that he had to prove his innocence by a clear and convincing proof of innocence. And when in a case all you have are witnesses from a 20-year-old case, there was just no way to do that. So he's sort of stuck in this limbo because the case was so weak, but that he was convicted by that weak evidence. Now the evidence is too weak for him to be able to exonerate himself.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You finish your sentence.
Oh, the machinery of the death penalty for those of us who live in the South and in Texas and Georgia, it's like a runaway train. Once it gets started, it's almost impossible to stop it without, like, some DNA or, you know, videotape right. confession of somebody else saying they committed the crime.
Right. Unless, especially if it's an African-American. I'm curious, you know, Troy Davis is black. What was the jury?
The jury was, there were several African-Americans on the jury. It was not an all-white jury or anything okay. like that. I think in this particular case, because the victim was a police officer, a lot of times when a police force loses one of their own, they adopt what is called tunnel vision. And the guy who other people think committed the crime, the one of the two witnesses, actually went to the police and told them that Troy Davis did it. And then they decided that was it. And then they focused only on him, and they focused on getting him convicted. And they never even treated this other guy as a suspect, even though he was at the scene, even though there are many witnesses have come forward who said he had a gun that night and all sorts of other evidence that never came up at trial because they never treated him as a suspect.
And that guy is walking free today.
He's around, yeah, he's in Savannah somewhere.
And, wow. You know, this is if there ever was a case for there not being a death penalty, this is right up there at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think what this case has showed with the hundreds of thousands of people taking action is that people are frustrated that our criminal justice system is so bureaucratic and also behaves as if there's no possibility of mistake or just make any room for error or doubt. And if you do have a system that just will move forward without acknowledging the possibility of doubt, you can't have a punishment that you can't reverse. You can't have executions under a system like that.
Right, right. And arguably, you know, if you want to have a civilized nation, you shouldn't have executions at all.
Oh,
The website, again, justicefortroy.org.
Yes.
.org. Justice, yes. JUSTICEFORTROY.org. Are there other? We're talking with Brian Evans, a campaigner in the Troy Davis case, the campaign to abolish the death penalty with Amnesty International, JusticeForTroy.org and AmnestyUSA.org. Brian, assuming that Troy Davis goes to his death tomorrow, where do we go from here?
Well, as I said, you know, this outpouring of hundreds of thousands of people, we need to keep this momentum. Even if we don't actually stop this execution, we've started a movement, I believe. Mm. And this energy needs to be turned to the state level for people whose states still have the death penalty, which are 34 out of the 50 states,
right.
to work as hard as we can to abolish the death penalty in our states, wherever we may live, so that there won't be any more Troy Davises.
Yeah, we stand alone with a very small number of very... you know, us and Saudi Arabia and Iran and I mean there's
China,
the states that have the death penalty. I mean it's not a long list any longer.
Yeah, the states that use the death penalty, they're usually in around 20 or so countries that execute every year, and the U.S. is always one of the top five executors, along with countries like the ones you mentioned.
Amazing. Yeah, I was going to Reagan National Airport over the weekend. And as I came down the walkway, here's this giant sign that says, "Welcome to the United States of America, home of 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners."
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's the kind of justice system we need to change, one that just has more humanity in it, if not this machine for killing.
Brian, we're out of time. JusticeForTroy.org, the website. Brian Evans, thank you so much, Brian.
Thank
Keep
you
up
so
the good
much
work.
For having me on.
It's an honor. It's an honor. Keep up the great work. We will be back tomorrow. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, show up. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.